Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Trust here, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
Looking at why what's on the charts is on the charts. Trevor, you're flying across the world, aren't you?
I don't know if it's really across the world. I mean, it's overseas, yeah. But I'll still be in the Northern Hemisphere. Don't worry, I'll be in London, UK. Yeah, so I'll be gone for a couple of weeks. So Gary wanted to switch up the format. Are we going to talk about that a little later?
Yeah, we'll actually do something a little bit different, hopefully fun, the next 2 weeks. This week, as always, we're going to do what we do here on the podcast, looking at the Billboard Hot 100 this week. We'll run down the chart's top 10, which finally includes a female artist this week in the top five, Rihanna. She scores her 31st top 10 this week. So we're going to look at who might be next to hit the 30 top 10 milestone. Only Rihanna, the Beatles, and Madonna have done that. So we'll get into that. Our guest this week, again, back for more, Mark Medina, program director of Z100 here in New York. And we're flashing back to what, Trevor?
We're flashing back to 1988, so 29 years ago. We'll talk about a moment like something that's really a repeatable phrase where Michael Jackson made history once again, this time in 1988.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10. All you have to do is stay a minute, just take your time. The clock is ticking, so stay. All you have to do is play.
Number 9. Oh, I want something just like this.
Number 8. Say congratulations. Work so hard, forgot how to vacation. They ain't never had the dedication. People hate and say we're changing.
Number 7. Number 6.
Sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Bitch, sit down.
Number 5.
I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet. Although my heart is falling too. I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my
room. Number 4. Number 3. Number 2.
Poquito, poquito. Y es que sabe, y ese es un rompecabezas. Pero aquí tengo la pieza, oye. Oh
yeah. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito.
And bringing us out once again for a lucky seventh week, that is Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee and Justin Bieber, Despacito. So yeah, 7 weeks on top, seven in a row. And we have, again, once again, back-to-back Bieber this week, who was also featured on the second song that you heard, number two, DJ Khaled's I'm the One, also with Quavo, Chance the Rapper, and Lil Wayne. So we've got Bieber holding down at numbers one and two, DJ Khaled at number two, and also joining the top ten once again at number four with Wild Thoughts featuring Rihanna and Bryson Tiller that you guys heard there. So that's two songs with Bieber in the top five and two songs with DJ Khaled in the top five. So, you know, four of the top five sharing acts right there. So pretty interesting and pretty rare, you know, that it's going to happen, Gary, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it just feels at this point like it's all Bieber and Khaled. It's happened before. It's very, very rare that this happens. That it's rare for one act even to have two songs in the top five, for two acts to do that at the same time, like Bieber and Khaled are doing now. Pretty rare. Actually hasn't happened in almost 9 years. Got to go back to late 2008 for a couple weeks in December. T.I. and Beyonce both had two songs in the top five. T.I. was in the top five with Live Your Life and Whatever You Like, and a Rihanna tie-in right there, which isn't surprising.
Well, I mean, she's been there 31 times now, so pretty familiar territory all the way back to 2005 when she came out.
And Beyonce joined T.I. with two top five hits at the same time. Single Ladies put a ring on it, and If I Were a Boy.
Yeah, so obviously two songs, Single Ladies and If I Were a Boy, both lead singles from the what would become the double disc album, I Am Sasha Fierce. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like If I Were a Boy kind of got, I mean, a ballad, good vocals. The video was pretty interesting, you know, told a kind of cool story, flipping gender roles, obviously, as the song lends itself to. And then, of course, you know, Single Ladies powering up. I mean, once that video hit and, you know, radio took over and it was just obviously unstoppable from there. T.I. is a little more, I think, interesting because obviously two hit singles, both of them hit number one for a while. And he had not been that big as he was in that moment of 2008. And right, that was just, you know, two songs that had staying power. This feat in a way is almost impossible without features. I mean, the rise of hip hop and, you know, the rap song collaboration really is kind of what has made this feat possible in a lot of ways.
So the other key news this week, a woman is back in the top five of the Hot 100 after a three-month break. It's the longest since 1972 that we went that long without women in the top five. So Taylor Swift with Zayn, I Don't Want to Live Forever, was the last top five hit before this week. We talked about that in the top 10 countdown on Facebook Live on Monday. The story as well on Billboard.com. Here's what's interesting to me as well, on top of everything else on the charts this week. Rihanna gets her 31st Hot 100 top 10. So who might be next at this point? I think that's worth looking ahead. If anyone can do this, third person ever to have 30, at least Hot 100 top 10s. So Madonna leads with 38. The Beatles have 34. And there's some, I suppose if you look at it a little bit differently, you could actually raise the totals. Elvis had a bunch of top 10s before the Hot 100, so he'd have somewhere in the upper 30s if the Hot 100 started back in 1956.
Or at least also have some more number ones. You got to think.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Hound Dog and a couple of other songs would have been up there.
And if you combine solo and group careers, like Diana Ross had 18 top 10s with the Supremes. They then had two more without her, but then she had 12 solo. So she's made 30 trips to the Hot 100's top 10 as a person. So that sort of counts.
Honorary shout out to Lady Di.
Michael Jackson is currently the person closest to getting a 30th solo top 10. He has 29 solo, but even he has 40 total. He had 11 with the Jackson 5 Jacksons as well. So technically, Michael Jackson.
Jackson 5 Jacksons.
Well, they were called the Jacksons later.
It makes it like it's a whole like one in the Jackson 5 Jacksons.
Some of the Jacksons. Yeah. Not Janet. Not all the Jacksons.
And yeah, not Jermaine for half of that either.
So Michael Jackson has 29. Could he get one more solo top 10? Obviously, he's not with us anymore. But even after he passed.
Love Never Felt So Good. Yeah, I mean, I guess you wonder how much is left in the Jackson vault. Wasn't like he was necessarily like a Prince, you know, prolific recorder necessarily towards the end. I mean, the fact that he's only one away is interesting. I don't know. I mean, I guess it really depends on what, you know, what he's got.
Stevie Wonder has 28. He hasn't had a big hit in a long time on the Hot 100, did just record a duet with Ariana Grande. So at least he's still recording with younger artists. Possible.
This is Gary's way of saying it's not going to happen, but... It, but you know what? It's okay if it doesn't happen for Stevie. Steve's got plenty of other things going for him.
All right. Tied next. 27 Hot 100 top 10s each. Mariah Carey, Janet Jackson, Elton John. Any of those three have at least three more top 10s?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, you know, it's not a bad thing. I mean, it's obviously... a lot of them... You know, I mean, Elton certainly just is... I mean, he's obviously putting out still albums, but... You know, I think at some point they kind of just seem like, you know, you settle into that touring and you settle into, you know, releasing some albums, but I don't think they're expecting, you know,
Elton John hasn't had a top 10 for 20 years now, since A Candle in the Wind, Something About the Way You Look Tonight. It was the longest leading number one hit, 14 weeks, turned out to be his last top 10 hit at this point.
Yeah, I mean, even that one, obviously, you know, kind of came due to a terrible circumstance. So, I mean, you can almost sort of backdate that even further to the one before, which would probably, something off The Lion King maybe, or maybe something after that?
Can You Feel the Love Tonight? 94.
So, I mean, again, you know, I don't really see it in the cards for Elton or Janet or even Mariah.
I'm going to hold out hope for Mariah because she had the most recent top 10.
Gary is a loyal lamb. And that was what, Obsessed in 2009?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Eminem, possible.
Eminem possible
song.
Yeah.
Elvis is next with 25. Beyond that, you get into acts more like Paul McCartney solo, a 23 top 10 solo on top of 34 with the Beatles. He actually, if you were to combine solo and group top 10s, McCartney leads all people individually with most top 10 visits, 57 total for McCartney. Beyond that, let's look at acts who... very possibly have a realistic chance of getting to 30. We'll start with just sort of picking and choosing here, but...
Wait, we're going to skip over... Now, Gary's going to skip over Jay-Z, which I think is interesting.
No, that was tops on my list. I wasn't.
Oh, he didn't have him highlighted.
It's even in... I have the new capital letters with the dash.
You're right. The hyphen is back. Making its return. Making its long-awaited debut on the Chart B podcast. Let's give it up for Jay-Z's hyphen.
21. Top 10 hits for Jay-Z. 9 more? Collaborations? Featured roles? Seems possible.
Yeah, very possible. I mean, obviously, the new album coming out on this Friday, on the 30th, you know, obviously helps out. But you're right. I mean, a few features on the next Beyonce album. I mean, he's obviously got ties with Rihanna, Kanye, Justin Timberlake. I mean, that definitely, you know, could slip through here and there and make it count.
Here's the act that, if I had to pick one act, I think... probably is the safest bet to get 30 top 10s. Drake, currently at 20. He could get 30, who knows, in the next year or so.
Okay, so I give another 20 the better chance, personally, and I'm going to go with Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I am. I think, I mean, the direction that she was just headed in, she's got 5 top 10s off the last album alone. I mean, just, I think she's got a real shot at dishing them out.
But Drake releases music more often and he collaborates with more people. And these songs, they start so high in the chart. He has a lot of top 10 deep. So does Taylor.
Yeah. That's obviously all very true. I think maybe in the long term, Taylor seems like the more consistent one, reliable one. I don't know. I mean, you got the 5 top 10s off the last album. You got the Zayn song that made 6. I mean, that's just within the last, you know, one album cycle. And I mean, as big as, you know, Drake has been, I mean, what, so he had One Dance off the last album, was a top 10 hit.
But then he had a couple from the new album.
So we had
debuted.
2. We had Passion Fruit in Portland. Fake Love was top 10. I don't know, 4 off the last album, 4 off the last 2 album cycles for Drake.
All right, well, we'll come back to this, I guess, when they get closer, whenever that is, when Drake does it first.
He doesn't believe in TS6. He doesn't believe in TS6.
Lil Wayne also has 20. He just got his 20th on I'm the One, maybe. Yeah. More features. Been away for a little while. This is almost a comeback hit in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's tied up with the drama that, you know, is Birdman and the Carter 5 and everything, so... Yeah, I mean, that, you know, the fact that he hasn't put anything out, you know, it's not that things have been flopping or anything like that. So, you know, Wayne's always a player, too. Like you said, I mean, between the features, I mean, he's got connections with, you know, all these newcomers, Drake, obviously, Nicki, and his whole Young Money crew. So, you know, you really can't doubt any of these guys. I mean, especially Drake and Wayne have put over, you know, 130 songs each on the chart. So
Usher is at 18. He'd almost have to double his output at this point, and it hasn't had as many hits in recent years. Maybe that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Couple acts with 17 top 10 hits each. Eminem has 17. Justin Timberlake has 17, although he also has 6 with NSYNC. So 23 total top 10s for Justin Timberlake.
And Aretha Franklin has 17.
Eminem, think he could do it?
I mean, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, he's been out for...
You tend to forget.
15,
yeah.
At least, somewhere between 15 and 20 years. I mean... At this point, do you kind of double it? I mean, would that require another 15-year stretch?
With Timberlake, it's interesting because he's gone so long between albums. If he had put out a couple more albums somewhere between 2006, 2013, maybe he'd be a little bit higher.
I mean, to be fair to Eminem, for example, like, he was the biggest artist of the last decade. So he's doing well on these album sales and in other places as well.
Which really just goes to show you, too, again, how big a deal it is that Rihanna already has 31. We're talking about people like Eminem with 17, Usher with 18. They've been around even longer, and she's almost doubled what they have.
And one of the things I think that kind of underscores is that I guess people may not be aware of just how valuable a feature with Rihanna is. I mean, there are so few features with Rihanna that don't go anywhere. There are plenty of artists who can be featured on a track and maybe doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't hurt you, but it's not, you know, it's kind of, okay, you know, we tried, it didn't work out, whatever. But I mean, so few Rihanna features, whether it's, you know, on tracks with Eminem. We've seen two, you know, number ones from that pairing alone. I mean, she's been on Run This Town, Kanye and Jay-Z, obviously T.I., Live Your Life, like we mentioned, probably a host of others I'm already forgetting about. Like, I mean, the Rihanna vocal is so recognizable, I think, and so catchy and so fun that I think that, you know, that in itself is like a gold mine for a hit. I think that's one thing that has really put her above plenty of the rest of the singers who get featured appearances.
Sticking with people who are more than halfway to 30, we'll do one more. Beyonce, 16. Solo, also 10 with Destiny's Child. So another honorary member of an even higher group total, 26 total trips to the top 10. Beyonce at 16. We've talked about this on the podcast. She's just gone in a more R&B hip hop direction for the last couple albums that, you know, a little less conducive to huge pop hits. So it might be a little tough for her to approach 30 top 10s at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think that she's kind of turned her focus away from singles and the singles chart to more albums and more sort of cohesive projects. I think especially if you look back at The Divide, you know, sort of in the post Sasha Fierce pre-4 era, when that switch sort of happened, her albums became much more consistent. But yeah, I mean, the downside of that, you know, in terms of this perspective, was that, you know, she didn't have the same kind of singles buzz and success that she used to have. I mean, you know, obviously I'm sure she's aware of that, and I think she, you know, is fine with that. I mean, I think it's great that we get sort of a more consistent body of work from start to finish from her. And, you know, I mean, if you can't have it both, you know, you got to pick which one you want.
And we'll just mention two other acts, not at 15 yet, but pretty close, and certainly within hit runs, because they're both in the top three right now on this week's chart. Bruno Mars has 14 Hot 100 top 10s. Justin Bieber has 13. I think they're both at a point in their careers that they still have many more hits, you would think, ahead. And the way Bieber just keeps racking up top 10s now, could do it.
He could.
You don't think so?
I feel like it's so far away that that's hard. That's so hard. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where you keep having hits until you don't. And I mean, for 16 more, I mean, that's, I mean, again, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where Bruno is, I mean, I guess he's about 6 or 7 years into his career. I mean, you think about if you've got to double that in theory.
Well, if our careers are still going strong in the future, we can keep tracking this and see what happens.
There you go. So, yeah, join us in about 8 or 9 years when we rerun this list and we see that Rihanna has gotten 85 top 10s.
Couple other things just mentioning in the top 10, the Chainsmokers get a 60th straight week in the top 10 this week, number 9.
Celebrating that diamond anniversary. Let's go, Chains.
9 weeks away from tying Katy Perry's record for most consecutive weeks in the top 10. Just as we tape this today, Trevor, got news of what the next official Chainsmokers pop radio single is.
Oh my gosh, could it be the one that they put out the video for earlier this week?
It's not.
It's not.
Nope. It's not Young.
Are they gonna go with the Every Night?
Break Up Every Night?
That.
No. Honest is the new single. A little more low-key.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice. I would not have, especially, I guess, for a summertime kind of, you think they really want to put something out with a lot of energy behind it.
But. Although that's where dance music is now. It's not necessarily super up-tempo. So it maybe fits even better, actually, because it is a little more.
It's a little understated.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess last summer they were, you know, having Don't Let Me Down and sort of the energy behind that. So maybe they want to change it up. Yeah.
All right. So we'll see what happens with that. The other, just beyond the top 10, Sam Hunt, Body Like a Backroad, should just mention, breaks a record on the Hot Country Songs chart. 20 weeks now at number one for Body Like a Backroad. That is now the longest running number one ever by a soloist. Passes, we mentioned last week, Leroy Van Dyke's Walk On By from 1961, 1962. And now only one song, has led longer. Cruise, Florida Georgia Line.
Oh,
24 weeks.
Boy. So, yeah, Sam's still got 4 weeks to go.
What helps, too, is there's no next single at the moment because this is just a standalone single. So the label can just keep working it, and it can get a little closer to that record with nothing else in the way.
I mean, that's kind of interesting that, you know, such a huge hit. They're not, I mean, not that they're wasting an opportunity to join on, but you wonder, I mean, especially some of these big hits always can kind of change the conversations internally about the direction and where to go. So it'll be really interesting to see, especially for somebody as, you know, someone that people don't feel like they have a great grasp on anyway, about where Sam's musical tastes exactly lie. I mean, it'll be especially interesting to see how this single and its success could affect, you know, the entire sound of his next album, or at least the next single and coming projects.
You could just do a whole album of songs that a body is like, other types of roads.
Yeah. Hit a formula Gary here. And his, I don't know if Gary's concept albums are, I mean, I guess Barbara Streisand did that album Wet, where everything was based around water, so.
Free advice.
Sam, if you're listening, just get going.
All right, let's get back into our guest, our industry insider interview, back for more. Mark Medina, program director of Z100, actually named Billboard's number one pop programmer of the year. You can read more about it in the latest Billboard issue on billboard.com. Plenty of other programmers we talked to as well. But let's get back to Mark. And Trevor's microphone, again, was not working while we were there. You're listening. You can listen again, Trevor, to the interview.
I know. I was doing some great listening, though, guys. And you should, too. So check it out here on the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Check 1, 2.
New York. Here we go.
Whoa. Put it on.
Hey, it's Luis Fonsi.
Turn it on.
It's your boy, Daddy Yankee.
Justin Bieber here.
Z. 100.
New York.
Come and move that in my direction.
Thankful for that. At its most basic level, how does a song get on Z100? What kinds of research do you use? I think some people think of radio as it's a guy sitting in an office in New York just deciding what millions of people are going to hear because he thinks it's good for the station.
Well, it's not that for sure. I mean, it's really
a lot of old school hip hop.
Not throwing any Dougie Fresh on Z100 anytime soon. It's that mix of both. It's gut and science, you know, it's art and science. we have the beauty of Top 40, obviously, is that we can sort of siphon off the top of every genre of music and take the best of the best and combine it into one radio station, and that's the basis of Top 40. So one of the things we always start with is balance. Like, okay, there could be 10 great EDM records, but we can't play and support 10 EDM records at the same time, even if they're all great. Like, that's a disservice to everyone, the listener, the artist, the label, the radio station. Like, nobody's going to win in that scenario. So sometimes it's a matter of balance and, okay, what does the station need this week? It's always a giant jigsaw puzzle. So that's the first thing. And then obviously the quality of the music, the production values, history with the artist. Sometimes an artist may put out a record that isn't the best thing they've ever done, but they've constantly delivered number one hits for your format and for your brand in the past. So, you know, you're more likely to go, okay, let's give this a shot and see, you know, if the audience reacts to it. And that's all, by the way, that's all most artists ask. They don't expect you to play records that aren't hits. They expect you to give their songs an opportunity to be heard, and then let the consumer decide. There's a lot of data coming to us from a lot of places all the time. You guys happen to be here on our music day, so you're going to see every record company in New York walk by this window at some point during this and go in and make the pitch for their music and their artists and stuff. So that's one way. That's the primary way. But also, yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about things like Shazam and some of the other metrics that exist that are out there today. We're certainly aware of them. It really becomes about knowing your brand, though, and knowing your product and knowing, okay, now's the time. Like, okay, I see that. That's 1 week. Maybe that's just, you know, let's watch. I compare it to like the box office, right? Like sometimes a movie debuts huge, number one, and everyone sees it and tells everyone else how much it sucked, and then it goes to number seven the next weekend. Like, okay, so then that means they were good marketers. They didn't make a good movie. They made a good marketing strategy. And I think it can be the same way sometimes with music. Like you learn when you do this, and I said earlier, it's about reps. You know what I mean? It's about how many call out reports have you seen in your lifetime? How many music meetings have you been in? How many different case studies and scenarios of the way the measurements work? And I think a lot of that is just knowing the DNA of your radio station. And that's why it's important when you get to a new radio station not to just come in and start tearing the place apart and doing your thing. You have to know what works for that station. An example for Z100 is, probably 2 years ago when Fetty Wap was blowing up. And I remember I was still very new at Z100, and I was watching all the metrics and all the different things going on. And I called Tom and I said, Tom, this is happening. Is this a record Z100 could play? Like, give me the history on that. And he agreed that it was. And that song ended up being in Trap Queen, ended up being a power for us, and went into power rotation eventually. At the same time, a lot of it is about managing your own and the label and the audience's expectations. A song like Bad and Bougie, we played when it was relevant to play, and in the times of day that we thought that the consumers that would appreciate that song were listening. And then when that moment was done, we stopped playing it. So, but we gave it a chance. We exposed it. We put it in our research and all that type of stuff. And then we make our decisions based on that. On the other side of that, you know, I think it's easy to get real over aggressive with some of the metrics that exist today. So I think that, like, consumption and Shazams and some of these other things, you can get a little drunk on all that too. And you know, what I kind of think is that though some of those metrics are probably a good, you know, 6 weeks away from what the average radio listener, because, you know, I still think those are we're still all figuring out what those metrics really mean, right? Like, it's getting more defined and more dialed in every day. But I think that until we know some of the things that are sort of behind the curtain about some of the metrics and some of the platforms, then we don't really know what they mean. We know what we see. We know what the consumer facing, and I guess we have some back end information in our company at least. But that's another thing that's great about the iHeart app is that we can get data from that we can use in making our music decisions. Or at least as another thing to look at. But I think you have to be careful about getting too far, like trying to keep up with the Joneses, you know? Okay, well, this song, because that stuff is still very fickle and there's a, it's very volatile, you know, something Shazam's number one this week out of nowhere, then it's gone the next week. Well, you know, I'm glad we didn't bite on that, you know, type of thing.
Are you looking at Humble? Kendrick Lamar, it's been number one in streaming with, you know, 50-60 million U.S. streams a week. It's not top 40 overall, isn't really biting on it yet. But what are you guys thinking about that song specifically with how big Kendrick is right now?
We are looking at everything. You know, I mean, I know that's kind of a stock answer, but it's really the truth. Like, nothing is ruled out, you know. It's not like we go, oh, we can't play that. You know, I give you like kind of the Fetty Wap example, and that was more of a sonic thing, and how it fit with the brand historically, that type of sound. We never shut the door on anything, you know. We may knowing our brand and our brand values, we may wait longer on some things. We may jump quicker on other things. But a lot of that is just going to depend on some of the history with those particular artists. Like with Kendrick, for example, there are a lot of things to tie into that make you pop culture relevant without necessarily always playing the record. You know, it's about an awareness too. You know, people want to feel like their radio station is tied in and that we know what's going on, that we know, you know, and there's ways that, you know, we can utilize and tap into that. And then as far as the record, you know, if it gets to a point where we feel like, you know, we can't not deal with this, then we'll deal with it. You know?
It feels like hip hop and rap, real core rap, it has been on the rise this year. It just kind of feels like we've hit a point where pop radio has to deal with some of these hits that are maybe a little atypical for the sound of the genre overall right now, but they're raising their hand in terms of how well they're selling, how well they're streaming.
I mean, look, we as programmers, we want stars for the format, right? In whatever form or shape that takes on. So I think certainly when we see something that has potential to cross to pop radio, we need to be paying attention to that. Like as top 40 programmers, our key, like our goal is balance, right? Because we don't ever want the station to sound like the Imagine Dragons station, nor do we ever want it to sound like the Drake station, right? Because there's one of those. There's a Drake station. There's an Imagine Dragons station. The basis of what we do is to blend the two together. And when there's a coalition of listeners that like both sides, that's when Top 40 does its best. You're always going to have the single lanes. There's always going to be the Drake people. There's always going to be the Adele people. But when they're the same people, that's when life is good for Top 40. In particular to those specific artists that you talked about, we talked a lot about platforms, right? And how anybody can be a star now. And we were talking about in the context of maybe like the radio host or the DJ from back in the day. But the same thing is true with artists. Like they can be discovered and exposed and marketed on so many different levels. So there is a whole new stream of opportunity for them to be discovered as well. And I think that, I mean, look, at the end of the day, what we do is marketing, right? Every song we play is a marketing decision. One of the things that we also have to do is align ourselves with people, and by people, I mean artists, that also fit our brand from a marketing standpoint. It's not just, this song made it to number one on this chart, so therefore it gets a spot on Z100. Like, it is part, every song we play is a marketing decision. So we have to make sure we're making smart marketing decisions on the whole, you know what I mean? It, not just this song that's playing right now. Even though that represents what Z100 is right now, we have to look at it more from a kind of a 360 standpoint.
You mentioned a while back how it was Tom Pullman who sort of brought back the station in the mid-90s. That was the time when pop music had gone pretty much fully alternative. And Z100's ratings went down at that point. And another example of how, as you say, Mark, Top 40 does best when it sticks to that variety. And hopefully the music is there, as it seems to be now.
Yeah, I mean, the play the hits. That's the simplest. If you had to distill Top 40 programming, you know, deep, dark secret, play the hits. You know, that's really what it comes down to.
New York City, please go easy on me tonight. New York City, please go easy on this heart of mine. 'Cause I'm losing my lover to the arms of...
One of the songs you played recently, we talked about this. You did a story on this because I thought it was so interesting. Chainsmokers, New York City. The song they had, mm-hmm. not an official single. This is while Closer was out and all the big hits they've been having. You guys were playing that pretty much at night on Z100. And I just thought it was really interesting for the biggest top 40 station to be playing a song that was pretty obscure. Obviously, it was by the Chainsmokers, one of the biggest acts right now. But I just thought it was neat that you guys went out and played something that probably a lot of people listening wouldn't know. They'd probably know that the five songs before and after that, but they wouldn't know that one. So
yeah,
you guys still take chances on that. What was the story behind that one?
So that was just a song that it was actually not even on the current album. It was on a previous album.
Right.
And we love those guys. I mean, they're friends of the radio station and we sort of, you know, we sort of helped launch things with Roses here at Z with them. And so we feel a real connection to really all the artists that we work with, but with those guys in particular. And Closer was kind of coming to it had peaked, I think. And we had them coming to our Jingle Ball concert, and we just wanted to keep the Chainsmokers momentum alive, you know. And they hadn't really decided fully on a next single yet, or if they're going to wait for, you know, and we knew they had stuff coming, but some people started playing another song, and you know, I kind of spoke up and said, you know, let's do this, because if this is about keeping Chainsmokers' momentum, even though it's from an old album, if it hasn't been exposed, and it's called New York City, and it's a beautiful song about our city, then, or, you know, not about our city, but, you know, framed around our city, then, you know, let's just do this. And that's what we did, and it sort of caught a lot of people off guard.
It sounded great, and I even like how it's sort of a bittersweet song. It's not even that it's entirely happy. It's sort
yeah.
of about how New York can be lonely at night,
yeah.
even with 7 million people.
Well, exactly. And that again, that goes back to that emotional connection that we talk about, is like, wow, that's, you know, New York City, please go easy on me tonight. You know, this gal obviously had a tough day. And it just sort of epitomized the "if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere" sort of, you know, mantra.
You mentioned those guys. What artists have you artists come in here all the time? Who have you gotten to know? Who have you gotten to like? Who are some of your favorites?
Kyle's the funniest. He's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, yesterday was we had a meeting with David Guetta. We heard a bunch of new stuff from him. And, you know, and then we had a little get together with Haley Steinfeld. So, you know, we'll have days like that where, you know, we'll have Haley's another one who's been, you know, really close with the radio station, DNCE, you know, Gaga.
She always says how she grew up listening to Z.
Yeah.
She loves hearing her music.
That's one of the things about being here that's really neat is we've had a lot of artists come in that grew up listening to Z. And they come in to do like Elvis, and they're more excited to meet Elvis and Greg T and Danielle than necessarily, you know, they're the star of the moment, and they're excited to see the morning show or meet the morning show that they grew up with. But that's what's really special, is when you see guys like Nick or Joe Jonas, Gaga, Charlie Puth, BB Rexha, you know, these. Halsey's another one who tells a great story about trying to win Jingle Ball tickets. I think it was that she skipped school to try to win Jingle Ball tickets when she was younger. And then she was the right caller, and she got so nervous that her mom was going to hear her on the radio that she hung up and didn't even get the tickets. I think that was Halsey. But, you know, hearing that kind of stuff, just it really reaffirms just like kind of how special this place is, you know. It's really cool.
Yeah, it might seem kind of corny, but like when I've gone to Jingle Ball, I always kind of look around Madison Square Garden and think, wow, these 20,000 people are here because of a radio station. It's always kind of a cool win for radio. Another big thing that's part of the job, Mark, is overseeing the air staff, never mind just overall radio and music. But is that still a big part of the job? Are you ever telling Elvis Duran what they should or shouldn't be doing? And is he saying, I've been here 20 years?
You know, there's no blanket like formula, like it's people, right? So you're dealing with a staff full of individuals. Even though we're a team collectively, it's really about knowing what's motivating to specific individuals. You know, with Elvis's show, it's more. There's so many moving parts. There's so many players, and there's so many levels to it because you've got, like you mentioned earlier, the nationally syndicated portion that is sort of under more of the watch of Premiere. Then you've got the impacts on Z100 and things like that. So it's really sort of a group effort. And Elvis is such a pro, and you know a lot of it. When you have a guy that you trust their instincts better than anyone, and you know he knows his audience better than anyone, you don't really get in and mess with that. You know what I mean? Certainly, we're here to help get whatever he needs done. And we do have, you know, research projects and things where we'll meet with some of the key people involved in that process, and we'll all sit around a table and talk big picture. But you know, you're never going to walk in and say, "Hey, you're not saying the time enough." You know, that's not what this is. And same goes with the rest of the staff. You know, I did when I first got here, I did sort of one-on-one meetings with everybody and just kind of wanted to know more about them and what motivated them. You know, what will they fight for? What are they committed to? And what do they want to do? What do they want to be when they grow up? And I don't spend a lot of time or create a lot of expectations of people that aren't within the framework of what they've told me they want to do with their life. That doesn't mean they don't have jobs and doesn't mean that they don't have things that I need them to do at times. But I think it works really nice because when I approach somebody with whether it's coaching or feedback or whatever, I already sort of know their perspective, their frame of reference. And look, again, there's that old saying you hear all the time, even Michael Jordan had a coach. Well, you know, it's sort of true. Like, it really becomes more about keeping people in the right headspace so that they can be the top level performers that you brought them in to be, that they are to have earned this position. And it's a lot more big picture. You know, it's less little naggy PD stuff, you know, and there's some of that, you know, sometimes. But a lot of it's like a hitting coach in baseball. You know, somebody goes into a slump, they need the hitting coach to say, "Hey, you know what? You're dropping your elbow a little bit, and when you hit the ball well, you keep that elbow up." And it's the same type of thing, you know. But that seems to work for me in my style, and I'm pretty laid back and low key. I'm not a yeller. I'm not a hotliner. I'm not any of those things. So I'd rather talk to everybody like adults and professionals that I know they are, you know.
Do you get a lot of the old days? It would have been tapes, but audio files from people who want to do weekends or move up to Z100. Is there any overall 101 advice you give to jocks?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that the answer is yes. We get a lot of that type of stuff, and when I was baby DJ, I'll never forget being like 16 or 17. I was a night jock back in my hometown. And I sat and made a bunch of tapes, and I sent them to big night jocks that I wanted to start networking with at the time. And I'll never forget that Chio the Hitman at Z100, the night guy, was the first person to respond to me. Whereas, like, the guy in El Paso never even got back to me. And I'm like, so the guy in Market One, you know, and JoJo was in San Francisco at the time, you know, got right back to me. Just, and that always sort of stuck with me that, like, you know, that meant so much to me that the guy in Market One had the time to get back to me. And again, it goes back to what I said earlier about, like, they're here.
Right.
They're not, there's nothing to prove. Like, you prove yourself every day through your work ethic and things like that and your results, but there's no, like, get away from me, kid. You know what I mean? And so I try to be mindful of that, how I was treated when I was the one seeking, you know, feedback. And so I try to do a good job about getting back to everyone and giving them the coaching. It's not always as timely as I would like it to be because, you know, it's not the first thing I do in the morning, but, I think it's important and growing talent, you know, going back to just, the platforms and stuff, like growing talent is something that we have to do as an industry. You know, that's not format specific. That's just content providing. You know, we need those entertainers. We need those good, strong talent. But a lot of times people aren't even necessarily looking to work at Z100. They just want feedback. Not, you know, it's surprising how many talent are just seeking feedback and they're not getting it in their markets. And they crave it, you know, even if they don't admit it, they crave it. A lot of it's case specific. If they say, hey, I'm working on my artist interviews, will you listen to these and tell me how you think, you know? But if it's for Z, it starts with just sort of an overall vocal range. And it's like anything, when you do it enough and you study it, you know, right when you hear it, you're like, you know, that could work. It's like a song, you know, some songs you give the courtesy of listening all the way through and go, cool, thanks. Same type of deal, you know.
Is this job 24/7, Mark? How do you get
25/8? You know, my wife's great. She's a huge supporter, number one fan, and so she really understands and she really gets it. I will say this: that, you know, obviously the radio never turns off, right? It's 24/7 situation. But I have a great team here, and so it's not a 911 situation around the clock. Like, it is really more so when you're coming up the ranks and you're, like, the only one there, and you're dealing with everything literally yourself, hands-on. So we have a pretty great team. A lot of it is just – it's more – for me, it's not that I'm necessarily 24/7 in the office, you know, building clocks and stuff like that. It's that I just never stop thinking about the radio station or the product. You know, it's like that perfect game. You're always seeking that perfect game. And, you know, you have to learn, I think, to have other interests, to detach your brain, because I always say, like, we play a game that has no final buzzer. There's no finish line to cross. Once a ratings period ends, you're right back into the next one. You could argue the holiday book, you know, whatever, if you're not a Christmas station. But even then, like, we have to deliver results in spite of the Christmas format. You know, so there's no – and if you don't take that time to defrag, eventually – You'll wear out, you know.
Is sports an outlet for you? You mentioned a lot of sports analogies.
Oh, I use a lot of analogies. For instance, no. I am a baseball fan, and I can zone out, you know, get my mind off things at a baseball game, you know, just by myself, watching the intricacies of the game and stuff.
A's, Giants. Does it go back to your upbringing?
You know what? It's funny. I did. I grew up an A's and Giants fan, actually.
I'll let the Yankees Mets fans battle that one.
Yeah, here I'm Yankees, so I'm gonna declare it officially. I'll say it right here first, Yankees.
As a Red Sox fan, I think we're done. I don't think I can go on after that. Thank you so much. This is great to hear all the behind the scenes of how songs, how everything works at Z100 here in New York. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Z100.
WHTZ.
Newark.
New York City.
And iHeartRadio station.
From the top of the Empire State Building, this is New York's number one hit music station.
Z100. New York.
All right, and that was Mark Medina once again, Billboard's number one pop programmer of the year. And speaking of things that are number one, let's flash back now to one of the Hot 100's most important number ones of all time.
She says there's no turning back. She got me in the other thing. No, no, no.
That's right, Dirty Diana, Michael Jackson. July 2nd, 1988, the song hits number one on the Hot 100, and that makes Michael Jackson the first artist to ever have five songs hit number one from the same album. Now, of course, this time, Michael Jackson's already the biggest star in the world. Thriller had been out since 1982. Obviously, everyone knows the story of all of that. You've got the Moonwalk, you've got the Thriller music video, you've got Billie Jean and Beat It changing MTV and all those kind of things. But even Thriller was not able to have five number ones. Actually had two number ones, which I think people think is a little low. Billie Jean and Beat It both hit number one, though the album did have seven top tens, which, of course, leave it to Michael to be the trendsetter. That was the first album to have seven top tens. So at this time, Michael has the most top tens from one album with Thriller. Bruce Springsteen had tied that at that time too, and now he's got the most number ones from an album with Bad. So, you know, Michael's just setting records on fire at this time.
For almost any other artist, if they had put out an album like Bad, that would so easily be their huge career achievement. And to have an album with five number ones, basically we're kind of saying it's, you know, in the shadow of Thriller. What a great follow-up. But still, it just shows you how huge Thriller just was and continues to be, that you can think of those five number ones and you still go back and think about Beat It and Thriller and Billie Jean.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, obviously, 5-year break between the albums. I mean, you think the momentum would have slowed or even paused right there, but it made people even hungrier. I mean, he goes on tour, you know, as a soloist for the first time. I mean, obviously, you know, as legend says, breaking records, you know, left to right at the box office, obviously. You know, Michael Jackson on tour for the first time by himself, huge event. And, you know, really just the fact that you can even sustain this kind of staying power. I mean, it had been about maybe 10 months into the Bad album cycle, but, you know, have five songs you can work to radio. I mean, the album is obviously immensely popular. So a lot of people have already bought the album, you know these songs probably back and forth. And the fact that you're still able to make that happen. I mean, that just, again, goes to show just how massive Michael Jackson was. But given that, I want to ask, so nobody was able to have five number ones from an album since Michael Jackson until 2011, when Katy Perry's Last Friday Night became the fifth number one from her Teenage Dream album, which, to tie that back into something we mentioned earlier, that is sort of the stretch in which she has those 69 weeks in the top 10.
That's right.
You know, across that same period, obviously five number ones, you know, you're hanging around the charts for a while there. But that was even a little bit before, you know, that's still when downloads are a big thing. That was a little bit before streaming really, really took off in the years coming after. So I want to ask you, Gary, here's a question. We haven't seen, obviously, five number ones from an album since. We haven't even seen four. The last person we saw to have three number ones from the same album, Justin Bieber's Purpose from 2015 into 2016. But as streaming, you know, takes over more and more and people can, you know, as soon as an album drops, they can listen through all the tracks, you know, figure out which ones they like, kind of discard the rest of them. A lot of people, you know, may not even return to the album again, you know, in its entirety. But do you think that given this new climate that an artist can sustain five number ones, you know, all the way through? I mean, this is something that takes, as we see with, you know, MJ and Katie, over a year, really, of investment and radio and interest and videos and all that kind of thing. I mean, do you think that it's possible that somebody can do this again?
I think it's possible, but I mean, again, this has happened two times in the last 60 years. So it's almost an impossible feat. I mean, it's happened these two times, and they were both albums, all five songs were huge radio hits. So I know I always defend radio a lot, but that just gets you that extra reach. You get a number one radio hit on the radio songs chart. It's 150 million or so people hearing a song in a given week, and that's going to drive streaming. It's going to drive sales. So, yeah, it's possible, but it's just so rare that it's very unlikely. I mean, Bieber had three number ones from the last album just in the last year. But is the album itself endangered?
Yeah, and we've kind of seen, obviously, with Taylor Swift, five top tens. So, you know, I guess you could say she's the closest lately to do that with 1989. Obviously, something like Michael Jackson in particular, you know, when the chart was sort of shaken up and down every week, it was a little easier to race in there at number one. But now, I mean, you look at, you know, in right. 12-week Ed Sheeran, 12-week Chainsmokers. I mean, these are kind of things that, all you know, that week at number two can be your peril, you know, if right. it's not working right.
Right, yeah. You talk about something like Shape of You. Say there could be five great number one hits from Ed Sheeran's album. Shape of You is still in the top five after 24 weeks, so it's keeping anything else that could even follow up at the moment.
So maybe you're your own worst enemy in the streaming climate. Who knows?
After those five number ones, there were two more singles. The album had seven singles. The sixth single, Another Part of Me, stopped at number 11 after five number one hits. Got to number 11.
And then, of course, Smooth Criminal was the single after that one. And that had a pretty well-known video. If you haven't seen it, what are you doing? But The Lean is in that video, which is, you know, when he like does, yeah, yeah. Even Michael like in the suit, and they all like lean like at this like ridiculous angle that you cannot physically do. They actually have like special shoes that they patented for it.
I remember the Alien Ant Farm,
of course.
Remake in the early
that was very popular. 2000s. Yeah, in like middle school.
The original, the Michael Jackson Smooth Criminal, got to number seven. So it's a big hit, but it's just kind of interesting how after five number ones, the next two got to number 11 and seven. So again, shows you just absolutely how difficult this is.
Actually, six top tens off the Bad album to follow up the 7 he had on Thriller, and we'll keep it in the Michael Jackson hit-making family. He was also the first solo artist to even have four top tens off the Wall. So each of those albums setting a new standard.
That's
we've
right.
got four top tens, the first time a solo artist had done that off the Wall. We jumped to seven top tens off Thriller. No one had done that before. And we jumped to five number ones off Bad, and no one had done that before.
I guess it wasn't record-breaking, but a little love for Dangerous, 1991.
Shout out to Dangerous for being just a great album. Unfortunately, can't quite put it in that kind of record-breaking company.
All right, what song are we closing with, Trevor?
All right, we're celebrating Dirty Diana, and it's number one. So let's keep it in the Michael Jackson rock family. Let's close with his best rock song ever, Beat It.
So, Trevor, you're going to be away. We're going to pre-record a couple shows for the next 2 weeks. We're going to do something a little bit different. Instead of talking about the current Hot 100 over the next couple weeks, we'll flash back 20 years and 10 years to the charts in July 1997 and 2007. Look back 20, 10 years, see what was different about the charts, maybe what was similar. Maybe there's some trends that are happening then that play into what's happening now. We'll flash back, and actually next week we're going to talk to an artist who had one of the biggest hits at this point in 1997, Paula Cole, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?
And the week after that, we'll kick things into 2007. We'll talk specifically about Pink, who was undergoing one of the biggest pop revivals we've seen in the past decade, going from more of an urban rock-leaning artist to one of the most consistent pop hit makers we've seen in the past 10 years. So we'll talk about that. We'll also hear from some folks at RCA Records about what Pink's up to lately. You know, she had her second child just earlier this year, and there are some whispers that she might be back on the music scene before 2017's over, so we'll dive into that as well.
Yep, and enjoy England, Trevor. You going to come back with an accent?
This is the part where I was half hesitating doing one, and then I'll pass on that. But we'll see, mate. That's more Australian, but we're doing an okay job. Nah, that's terrible. That's awful. That's quite bad. In the meantime, take it away with the Billboard number one and Grammy Record of the Year. This is Michael Jackson's Beat It.
Thank you. Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com